keep fighting the fight. Be visible. Include yourself. Invite yourself. Speak. When you do go to something, speak up. Giving women a platform is essential. And these incubators are doing an excellent job of that.
Welcome to Voices of Leadership, the podcast that shines a spotlight on the remarkable women of the International Women's Forum, who are reshaping industries, defying norms, and being instigators of change. I'm your host, Amy, and I'm inviting you on a journey through the minds of trailblazers. On today's episode, we welcome Tricia Mumby. Tricia is an entrepreneur, co-founder of Mabel's Labels, and a guiding force in the world of business. Join us as we talk about Tricia's love of buying URLs, her current interest in Belize travel, and her business book club. Tricia also takes us behind the scenes of Mabel's Labels. As a co-founder, she helped grow the company from its humble beginnings in a basement in Hamilton to an award-winning company. Learn about the highs, lows, and pivotal moments that led to the acquisition by Avery, the world's largest printing company. Tricia hasn't slowed down, and we delve into what she's up to now, including her work as a core mentor at the Accelerator Center in Waterloo, where she advises and guides startups as they work to build and grow their own businesses. Hi, Tricia. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I am so excited for you to be here. I am fascinated by your story, but also we don't know each other that well, and I'm really interested in getting to know you better.
Oh, thanks.
So you and I recently met through IWF, and we also have a labels connection because you worked with Karma Engel, who now is the general manager at Mabel's Labels, and we know each other because our kids went to school together.
That's right.
I think one of the last times that we ran into each other was at Canada Connects, the IWF National Conference.
Yes.
We hosted it here in Waterloo, and I know you were part of the planning committee. What was that experience like?
It was a lot of fun. I haven't been all that involved. We did just go through a pandemic, I suppose. But it was kind of forcing myself to get involved with that, forced me to get to know a lot of really great people that I'm so glad I know. And when you're working together and working on a project, you really get to know people. And it was wonderful. And they're all great. And it's much different than just going to a meeting here and there or going to a dine around and sitting beside someone for a short period. So it was excellent.
Who actually introduced you to IWF?
Jane Klugman, yes. Messaged me many times over the years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was because they were trying to get more entrepreneurs or what it was, but I just never had time. Our business was based in Hamilton, so I drove from Kitchener to Hamilton every day for 16 years.
So you were mostly based here. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I live in Kitchener. So I just really never had time to get involved in KW things. And when I left the business, I dove headfirst into all kinds of Waterloo Region things.
What else are you involved with in Waterloo Region?
I'm a mentor at the Accelerator Center.
Yes.
And that's wonderful. And also Innovation Guelph, which isn't Waterloo Region, but it's just down the road. I mentor at a couple other places. But also I just got involved with some other small businesses in town that I knew of that I felt like I could make an impact with as a mentor, or I've also had some consulting gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, as soon as I put on my LinkedIn that I'd left my business and was open to other experiences, I just immediately was contacted by interesting businesses that I decided I wanted to work with, and a lot of them were local. It's very important for me to be local now after all those years of commuting. I haven't been to Toronto since 2020, and now I'm like, I wonder how long I can make that last.
Oh, I agree. It's a difficult difficult go. So you mentioned the Accelerator Center.
Mm-hmm.
First, can you explain what it means to be a mentor at the Accelerator Center?
Well, it means all sorts of things. Typically, you have a specialty. And so they have a broad range of mentors that have different specialties. So my specialty is direct-to-consumer, e-commerce.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was a founder and I had an exit, I often get pulled into meetings about that.
Right.
And because I worked in e-commerce, you naturally have a lot of knowledge around UX. So even if it isn't a direct-to-consumer e-commerce business, I seem to find myself talking to brands just about their website, mm-hmm. even if they're not direct-to-consumer. One of the other things I have gotten myself involved with over the years is a community tech pitch competitions here and there. And so I do like to help people prepare for their pitches. You know, I'm not a professional communicator, but I certainly understand what the deck should look like and give some tips there. So I feel like as an entrepreneur, I am titled an e-commerce direct-to-consumer expert, but really as you know, when you run a business, you involve yourself in absolutely everything.
Yes. You usually have some experience with all aspects of the business. In general, what are your thoughts on why is mentorship important?
Oh, it's so amazing. And it's mentorship is important. And that I knew always. And so I always took it from the very first days of Mabel, my partners and I, my business, Mabel's Label. So my partners and I looked at who we knew and what we could knock on their door for. And we sought out mentorship, which is very awkward.
Yes.
You know, I showed up at office hours at my old economics professor, lined up with the students to say, hi, I don't know if you remember me, but I was your student in 1992, and I have got some questions. He is still a mentor. I'm having lunch with him next week.
Oh, that's
love
fantastic.
Him. But that is an awkward way to find a mentor. And now with these accelerators and incubators, it's amazing. Any startup that is not part of an incubator, I don't know why. Some of them are free. Some of them are very inexpensive. Some of them you can get grants for. They'll actually give you a grant for your business, plus not charge you for the mentorship. It's just a no-brainer, and it takes away all of that awkwardness of going out and finding, you know, hey, I'm just wondering if you would meet with me once in a while. If you do seek that, if you want to be mentored by someone who is not part of a mentorship program, I really encourage you just to ask, because it's flattering. If they've got time, they're going to.
Of course, most people want to share what they know and pass it along to the next generation.
Yeah, and help people learn from their mistakes. Mm-hmm. Help people, like, honestly, our kids don't want to hear our business stories anymore. And so a lot of, you know, sunsetting entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs with a big, vast library of stories, they look forward to having somebody who's genuinely interested in their mistakes and their wins. And also people like that typically are sharers and networkers.
Yes.
So if they can help you by introducing you to someone that's useful to you, they take a lot of pride in that. We take a lot of pride in that. So just ask.
Yes. And I think that you touched on something too, that mentorship isn't just about working with a company necessarily. Connecting people and introducing someone to someone is also a form of mentorship.
It really is. And it is, to go beyond that, sometimes I feel like a bit of a therapist, a wildly, wildly unqualified therapist. But sometimes you just need someone to talk to that's been there when you're at your last rope, where you don't know if you can make payroll next month, if you don't know you know, some disappointment has happened, or you're struggling to understand something with your business partner, with a supplier, and you just need somebody to talk to. And if you are a solo entrepreneur and you don't have a network, which I would also encourage people to find, of other entrepreneurs you can lean on, it's very lonely. So taking advantage of someone that's willing to talk to you and understand you and is genuinely interested, I don't know why you wouldn't.
So you have worked with a variety of entrepreneurs at the Accelerator Center. Can you share with us some experiences you've had as a mentor?
Oh gosh, so many. I had some very exciting times I guess it was in the spring. We had a couple of companies at the Accelerator suddenly get a knock on the door. Well, a knock on their phone that they were invited to audition for Dragon's Den.
That's exciting.
And so that was just like a really flurry of exciting. Like, those are the most exciting things, when, you know, you're strolling along as a mentor and maybe you get the odd meeting on your calendar here and there, but suddenly you get urgent, we need to talk. What's happening? It's almost always good news when it's urgent. Well, that's not true, but those are the things I remember. So that was exciting. Last month, I was, it was a weekend, I remember, and I got this urgent text from one of my clients. They had a Facebook post go very, very viral, and they had no idea why. And I looked at it, and honestly, I had no idea why either, but it was so exciting, and they gained so many followers. And we actually have a meeting about it this afternoon to try and figure out what it was and how can we recreate it. So those are the things I remember, is when they really want to share their news and their stories. And, you know, like I said, you can only tell your friends over wine about stuff going on in your business so many times before they are bored to death. But mentors want to hear it.
Right. So let's talk labels. You are one of four co-founders that started Mabel's Labels back in 2003. Is that correct?
Sure. Yes.
About then?
I always say 2002.
Do you?
Okay. I don't think we counted, though, our
before anybody
messy
knew who you were.
6 months of startup before we turned a printer on.
And for those who don't know, Mabel's Labels sells durable, personalized labels, tags, and more for kids. It's pretty much everything you need for kids and families to stay organized, which I should know because I'm a customer. The concept of personalized labels and the technology that you used really disrupted the label market. Not everyone gets an opportunity to disrupt like that. What was that experience like?
Well, it's wonderful and awful. So there really wasn't a label market. People weren't buying labels for their kids' stuff. We were first to market. So first to market can either be a disaster and an uphill battle because you have to educate the market. You have to create need. You have to convince people that they've got a problem. And so that can be a real struggle for a lot of businesses. But it can also be amazing because it's greenfield and it's new and the press wants to talk. The press only wants to talk about what's new. And in 2003, 2004, press was important. And that's a...
it was probably printed on a newspaper, was it?
Oh, newspapers, magazines, and influencers like mommy bloggers were coming up. Social was new. So having something new and genuinely new is a great place to be if you can build that space. We were very lucky. I always say if I were to start another business, it would only be a business directed at moms. If you create a product that genuinely does what it says and makes mom's life easier, they will tell their friends. They will buy it. They will tell their friends. They will force it on their friends. They will forward your emails. They will share coupon codes. And that's what happened. It was just we got over that awful part of bringing something new to market and creating a need fairly easily because of our audience.
Yes, I would agree. I think I probably heard it from a mom too. Mm-hmm. So, and you really did the online consumer part quite well. I think back then it wasn't as easy to buy things online. It was challenging sometimes.
It was. And yeah, our website was very simple. One thing that is still true today that I mentor all my clients on is trust signals, making sure the website has a lot of trust signals. We promise you this. We promise you that. We are Canadian moms. Show our faces. All of the things that make people comfortable were very, very important in 2003, but they're still very, very important.
What markets do you think are ready for disruption today?
Oh, so many. I really think that there's still a lot of room in decision-making. You know, I recently saw a business that helps women in particular choose the right vehicle for them.
Oh, there you go.
And I thought that was interesting because there's a real loss of trust. Nobody can trust anything. You know, you see some car, you're like, I'm looking at that and I think that's the car for me. Well, suddenly your TikTok is filled with crash tests showing how you're going to die in that car.
Yeah.
And there's just so much, we have so much information that I feel like there is room for, we are all stricken with decision paralysis. So services and websites and businesses that make decisions easier. I'm very currently interested in the swiping exhaustion. Everyone who is dating is absolutely sick of swiping. And I can tell you right now, there's no other great solutions. Those are two spaces that I feel, yeah.
Filling a need or recognizing fatigue maybe in the way something currently is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mabel's Labels and leadership. So startups, even if they have multiple founders, generally only have one or two of the founders that are fully involved in the day-to-day. That's a generalization, but that's normally how it is. My understanding is that was not the case with you guys. Everybody was involved.
Yeah.
So how did you make that dynamic work, both on a day-to-day basis and from a leadership perspective?
Well, very early on, we realized it was not scalable to have us all involved in everything. Mm-hmm. While we were raising Mabel, we were also raising 11 kids between us. So it was kind of crazy. And so we pretty quickly realized we had to divide and conquer. And so we split the business up. And sometimes we shuffled the plates. But typically I was marketing and e-commerce. Julie Ellis was finance. Cynthia was always production because she wanted production in her house and then in her bigger house and then around the corner from where she lived. And Julie was PR. Mm-hmm. So we all had staff that we managed and we all had decisions that we made. And we would come together weekly, typically, so sometimes constantly by text. Yeah, we had to. I don't really understand. I see businesses making that mistake, trying to do everything hand in hand, and I kind of try to nudge them and try to envision how this is going to work in the future. And I tell them a story that is very true. When Mabel was growing up, we went to these trade shows with other mom-based businesses, largely because when the maternity leave switched from 6 months to 1 year, I think that was 2002, there was a huge influx of women starting small businesses because I feel like that 6 months to a year difference gave women a taste for a different life. Mm-hmm. And they really didn't want to go back to work, which is my partner Cynthia's story. She really didn't want to go back to work. She was the first person I knew to take the full year. So there were all these women at these little trade shows, and we became very good friends with them. I'm still friends with these women that started hat companies and blanket companies. And Erica M. from Yummy Mummy Club, she was one of them at that time. And we kind of made this little group that followed each other around for years and years. And everyone, as we grew, everyone said, "You're so lucky that there's four of you. That's why you're doing so much better than us." And I don't know if that's why we were doing, seem bigger than them or whatever, but it is absolutely true. If you can make a four-person partnership work, you are so much more powerful. The key is making a four-person partnership work. Mm-hmm. Open any business book, and the first page is usually partnerships are a terrible idea. Partnerships where people are related is a super terrible idea. And we did all of that.
I can maybe agree with that. So when you were dividing it up, was that an easy process? Did everyone have already sort of a section they were interested in, or was it a negotiation?
We did definitely have our own niches, and so it was easy. Mm-hmm. I'll say, though, as the business grew, it became less simple. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes marketing seemed very glamorous. Like, I was traveling all over. Right. I was doing interesting things. Julie Cole goes to parties and wears mm-hmm. pretty dresses and gets her makeup professionally done for some things. Mm-hmm. And you can see how that might seem like the better deal. So we would swap things off from time to time. Like, and that just takes open communication. You know, I remember some of us saying at some point, like, I need to learn to be a public speaker. Like, this is not going to be here forever. I need to get a profile for myself. Mm-hmm. So we would help each other out where we could, but we also had to face some truths. Julie Cole is much, much better at a 5,000 person room than I am.
Right.
And I am better at going to China and looking at a factory because mm-hmm. I understand manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Even though the trip to China may have sounded glamorous, it wasn't. We had to face some just core competency realities.
So I'm very interested in your transition out of Maples Labels. Your company was acquired by Avery, mm-hmm. which my understanding is the world's largest label company.
Yes. Well, Avery is owned by CCL Industries.
Ah, there we go.
That is a Canadian company traded on the TSX, and they are the world's largest label company. Okay. Everything. There are things in here.
Yes.
These are made by everything.
So people exit companies and they get bought out all the time. But I feel like this was on a whole different level. I'd really like to hear a little bit about that story.
Well, it wasn't bought on a whole different level financially. It was rather.
But the components, I mean, often it's a little company and that gets sort of acquired by a larger company before it's fully scaled often. I mean, and that's where mm-hmm. we live in Waterloo. We hear
that's
a lot
Waterloo
of those
region, yes.
stories. So, I mean, that's my personal experience with knowing people or being involved. I'd be just curious how it all started. Who did they approach? How did the four of you decide that, yes, you wanted to pursue this idea, and how long did it take, and where were your challenges?
Okay. Well, typically, you even consider it if you have kind of hit the end of the road or a wall. And, you know, we were maybe, I guess we were 10 or 12, 11 or 12 years old, and it was difficult. We got it to a certain point. We had a lot of big wins. We had just launched into Walmart, Target, HEB and Meijer in the U.S., and Amazon. And I think that's what caught Avery's attention. We were taking shelf space for them. They will not admit that. I've asked. They say they followed us for a decade. But it came out of absolutely nowhere. But we never thought we would be bought. We used to say, like, you know, advisors and mentors would say, "What's your exit strategy?" "Well, someday I plan to die." That's my exit strategy. I have no idea. Who on earth would ever want to buy this business?
Right.
We promised our customers within 24 hours of putting your credit card in our website, they'll be in the mail. That is a pain in the ass business. Mm-hmm. I always felt like that guy in the old Dunkin' Donuts commercials. Mm-hmm. Every day we just had to get up and make the labels. Somebody was sick. Somebody couldn't come. Somebody's kids were sick. Oh, God. So it felt hard. Not hard. It was enjoyable, but it was work. Like, we weren't automating and we weren't outsourcing. Everything was done in our building. And so we just never thought anyone would buy us. And we had advisors kind of tell us that, too, that this would be a difficult thing to sell. And because we live in Waterloo region, we do just hear that. People buy ideas. They had to buy a whole bunch of staff and equipment and processes. So one, I guess, July 2015, somebody just left a voicemail. "Hi, my name is so-and-so from Avery, and we're wondering if you're for sale."
Wow.
And I remember I was listening to it on speakerphone. I just remember standing at my desk, and nobody was around. It was a July long weekend, I think. And I just listened to it over and over, and I called all my partners separately because I didn't know how to make a group phone call. And they're like, "Oh my God, I guess we got to get together." So the next week, like, "Are we for sale?" And We had an advisor that we were working with at the time that kind of sat on our board and gave us sage business advice, and he walked us through the process of thinking about it, and we were going to explore it. And we thought we had some negotiating skill, but or some negotiating room, but really when a big, big company is buying you, you know, as we were negotiating, it finally came down to this. Well, we know about all of your competitors, and we're going to buy one of you.
Interesting.
And we have, and this is true, we have to make this deal close by December. So if this can't close in 6 months, it's dead. I don't know if that was true, but now I understand that big, big companies do have a goal. Mm-hmm. So that person who's doing the acquisition, her goal was to make a acquisition by that fiscal year end. So I don't know how much room we had.
Right.
We did have some room in price. We did have some room in what we wanted out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all good. They said they bought us because they didn't have any direct-to-consumer businesses and they wanted to understand direct-to-consumer. I don't know how much of that was true. They've been since in a bolt-on acquisition phase. They bolt on companies and just, you know, peel away the profit and put against theirs, which is fine and legit. But yeah, I don't know how much of it really was to learn from us.
Right.
I stayed on for 4 years after the
acquisition.
Oh, you
did. Okay, that was my next question. So your exit was you stayed on for 4 years and in the marketing part of it or something else?
As a general manager.
As a general manager.
Yeah, so that was part of the deal. One of us had to stay and run it.
Okay.
So three of us technically stayed, but one left within 3 or 4 months. It just didn't fit.
Right.
And that was fine. We didn't have an earnout. So she moved on and Julie Cole and I stayed and Julie did her marketing, her PR thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a general manager. And it was okay, although I had to learn a whole bunch of skills that I did not have. And I was very open with them, too. I was like, if you want a financial manager, you probably want so-and-so. That's not me.
Right.
But I had fronted the deal. So one of the decisions we made during the acquisition, and I encourage everyone pursuing an acquisition to do this, that I pulled out of the business more or less and only did the acquisition. Because had we all needed to have our heads down inside the acquisition, it would have been very disruptive. And because a publicly traded company was buying us, we could not breathe a word of this. We couldn't tell anyone.
Wow.
We didn't tell our husbands until maybe 2 months before.
Really?
We didn't tell our parents till 2 days before.
Wow.
I didn't tell anyone because they said it would die. It would just die. And we believed them. Maybe it would have. So we really didn't tell anyone. And so I had to just quietly... Because I always lived in Kitchener, I was always a little disconnected. Like,
right.
I came and went. I didn't keep regular office hours. So no one missed me. No one noticed I was missing. And I ran the acquisition. So I think Avery got to know me the best.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's why. But so, yeah, I stayed on as a GM and it was good for a while. And then when COVID hit, it was not good.
No.
And it just about ended me. So I ended it before.
So was it because people weren't buying labels or was it because...
Well, people weren't buying labels. They had no back
yes,
to school.
I didn't lose anything for a while. It was great.
So kids didn't go back to school for March break. So that was the first panic. okay, people aren't going to travel over March and April. Americans buy a lot of labels for their spring breaks in April. And we're like, okay. And then when it went on a bit, we're like, what's going to happen to summer camp?
Mm-hmm.
Our second biggest season.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? There's no back to school? This has got to be a joke. We were still busy enough, though, that it became... an issue. And we very, very quickly pivoted to making our equipment could also make, you know, the distance markers for floors,
yes.
signage
mm-hmm.
for walls. The adrenaline of COVID starting and us having to pivot actually was an exciting time for me. I loved it. We were able to source the plastic that could make the shields.
Right.
And we found a company in Kitchener that could make the foam and we had to source elastic. And then we found a company in Hamilton that could make children's size masks because they had been making gym clothes. That was kind of exciting, but staffing the place was an absolute nightmare.
Right.
And then when summer came and we were busy, you know, all the students, many of the students that we had hired summer after summer were like, I don't know, the Trudeau's going to give me CERB to play Game Boy. So I'm going to do that. We also relied heavily on temp agencies, which already is a troublesome pool.
Mm-hmm.
It became, I thought I was on TV. I thought this was a reality show that no one told me about. It was brutal.
4 years wasn't a time frame you had to be there.
No.
No. So you just stayed. And then when it wasn't right anymore, you were able to leave.
Also, like during the 4 years before COVID, CCL was an amazing company to work for. Mm-hmm. I mean, I traveled all over the world. I got into factories. I had no idea. It was like walking through the polka dot door. This is how you make Advil bottles? Like amazing things that I never would have seen. And as a print nerd, it was really exciting. And because they acquire companies as a strategy, and they typically keep the founders on. I met some amazing entrepreneurs that sold their businesses to CCL, and we would get together at these big annual meetings. And I mean, some of them sold their businesses for astronomical amounts and have stayed on and are just really interesting people. So all of that was fun. The perks were great. But when COVID hit, there are no perks.
No, they all kind of go away.
I was running a laminator because I couldn't find a student to do it.
Now, were you still there when we did all go back to school and we had to label everything?
No. Actually, it's a year. It's now? 3 years today.
Today.
November 1st was my last day.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks.
Did you then transition Karma into your job?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we talked about it with Avery, and they knew Karma very well because marketing is just integral. And really could have gone either way. Like the two things that are most important to a company like that is the marketing and the IT. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Karma's just the leader. She was, everyone likes her, and it was just a natural fit. And she's willing to do it. Honestly, I give her some warnings.
Driven. And because she lives here too and does the commute, right?
She does.
So you decide to leave, and then you transition Karma. And then what did you do right after? Did you take some time, or did you jump right into something else?
I said I was going to have a gap year. I was going to do nothing.
Good for you.
That did not happen.
No, because you're an entrepreneur. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. So then I think within a month, I accidentally had a customer. I've got this problem where if I see a business that's just doing something wrong, my favorite tool on the planet is Vidyard, a software that was created by Waterloo Region founders. And if I just see something doing something wrong in their business, I can't help myself. I send them a Vidyard and just say, hi, I use your product all the time. I read this article about you. And here's what, I just see this on your website. You know, I don't see dead people. I see bad hero images and no calls to action. And so I send a few of those out just because I can't help myself. And honestly, probably 8 out of 10 I end up either being friends with or working for or something. So I found some clients, but I was very choosy. I didn't work too hard. And I called the Accelerator Center right away. I said, I've always wanted to be a part of this. How do I get in? They didn't have any direct-to-consumer clients at the time. But then as they brought some in, they called me. So it's just been gradual.
So you've been doing that. And then in my research, of course, on your LinkedIn profile, it says you're looking for startup adventures with interesting people, which, by the way, I think is a fabulous job description.
It is.
So on that vein, what is next for you?
I have no idea. I haven't changed that in the 3 years that I've been fun employed, because I do get the funniest little pings from people on LinkedIn. Like, I've had many people approach me to be a co-founder.
Oh, wow.
So you didn't actually co-found the business, but you can become a co-founder seems to be a thing I did not
market.
Know about.
There we go. There's a market we can disrupt.
Yeah. I do just meet interesting people. And I don't know what's next. I still haven't found – I mean, I buy about 2 URLs a week. I can't help myself.
Oh, wow.
I've got a problem.
Yes. I love doing that, too. I don't buy them, but I love thinking about them.
Oh, you got to buy them.
What's one that you bought?
I can't tell you.
Oh, you can't tell me. But you own it, so it's fine.
I guess. Okay. So disrupting. So I've got this idea. Maybe we can start this.
Okay.
Somebody recently said the word bleisure to me.
Bleisure.
And I was like, what are you talking about? Well, it's when you go on a business trip, but you turn it into a bit of a leisure trip. You add a few days on.
That happens all the time.
Oh, my God. So I thought he was just making that up, and I Googled it. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
So I might have bought some URLs around that.
I love that idea. We can get a tax accountant as part of it to tell you how to pull it off correctly.
Yeah. Well, I've got a friend in the travel world that I've talked to her about it. I don't know. I have far too many ideas. It's kind of a problem. I started a Notion account and a whole Notion set up just to keep my ideas straight.
I love it. That's
that
great.
I may never do anything
no,
with.
No, but yeah, I think that's great. You go back I think ideas are great. You never know what will come of something at some point.
I don't know that I have, it in me. And I know that I'm a partnership person. Mm-hmm. I know, and I've said this from the beginning with Mabel's Labels, If I didn't have them that I was accountable to, if I didn't have my partners that I owed something to, I would have just watched TV and thought about it. I think accountability in a partnership is probably key to success. So I don't know. We'll see. I did start. I have actually like made a start on a couple.
Good.
And then I don't know. I'm still not there.
Yes. I you know, once you do it, to go back, it's like school. Once you do school, to go back is difficult. I think once you do something from ground up and successfully exit, going back is challenging.
It is. And there's, you know, I haven't personally felt this, or maybe I'm in denial about it, but I know a lot of people in my position that are afraid to start because they're afraid to fail. To have a big success and not be successful. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's my problem. I think it's just motivation and maybe not finding the right partner or the right push, but we'll see.
Now, I do know about one of your ideas, talking to Ginny, your business book club.
Oh.
Because she was talking about the book you were doing. And I know it's not a monetized idea as of yet, but tell me a little bit about that.
Because I'll just buy that.
There you go. Quick. Hold on. We have to pause. You need to buy that URL. I thought it was a great idea. I mean, there's a lot of book clubs here and there, but A, there's not a lot of accountability and not everyone always likes the subject. I'm thinking this sounds like more of a cohesive group. So tell us a little bit more about your business book club.
Well, it's not my idea. So the book we read is called Limitless by Jim Quick. And in the first chapter, so somebody that we know recommended it to me and said, Sharon Vanstone said, mm-hmm. we should read this. We read it as a company. And I thought, okay, I'll read it. I just bought it for myself. But chapter one says, stop, find a book club.
Oh,
he
no
says
way.
You should find 15 people, one for every chapter, and everyone should treat the chapter like they're giving a TED talk. They have to prepare a presentation for it. So I put it out to about 20 people, seeing if I could drum up 15. I got 15 immediately, although many dropped out. We're down to a few. And it's been great. It's been really great. I think I would do it again. I've got a couple of books in mind. And I've never read a book so slowly. Like really, it's like a bit of homework. You don't just sit down and read the book. You read the first chapter. You read the chapter and then you don't read ahead.
Oh, so then you wait and then you do the presentation.
Yeah. So you watch someone's presentation and we have great conversations. I really purposely put together some funny people. Some people that one person who I'd really admire who's stuck with Avery kind of as a upper middle manager, but he's a company guy, but he's not a company thinker. I wish he would leave. Somebody that a really young guy that I met through Avery who worked at Google and Microsoft and he's really bright and he's just starting a startup. And then Ginny DeBenko and, you know, I thought of Tracy from the Oktoberfest committee because she's just made a huge transition in her career.
Yes, like she has.
I also thought about people that are in different stages of their careers. I know a very young woman who's not going back to work after her second mat leave. And so that reminded me. And so she's starting her own thing. And I'm like, okay. And yeah.
Well, I love the concept of
it's been good.
Presenting a chapter. Ginny was telling us, you know, hers was on the fitness of the brain and that's a passion of hers. And, you know, she was excited to do it and seemed very animated about it. So
it's a very good way to read a book like that. And I think other books that lend themselves to that, like Atomic Habits, I think would. It's because if you do just sit down and read the book, you probably don't give yourself the time to stop and actually pay attention to the exercises they recommend, do the exercises they recommend, answer. You're not accountable to answer questions to anyone. So I think it's been really good.
I'm reading The Fun Habit and I'm finding that right now. That would be another one I think would work.
The Fun Habit.
Not that it's hard to get through, but there's so much I want to do with all of the information that I run
Stop
out
reading
of time.
It. Let's start a book club.
Yeah, okay, I will. Let's do it. Because that made me think of that when I'm having – it's a challenge to get through it because I want to do everything, but I don't make the time to do everything.
And so you have to because you have to show up on Wednesday night at 7.
Right. And I think that that's
– And tell people what you did.
Accountability in general seems to be something that makes things successful in general.
That's very true. That seems to be a theme today.
So what is next for women in leadership, do you think?
Oh – Keep fighting the fight. You know, it's exhausting. It's amazing that we still have to work this hard and that people still don't understand. You know, I recently had a conversation. I was out to dinner with some very powerful women, very smart, educated women. And we were all talking about the Barbie movie and how excellent it was. And this one woman said it was terrible. I said, why was it terrible? Like, I thought maybe she didn't like the art. Or she said, it was just so... we don't need this. And it was just, they made men look stupid and it was mean to the men. I was like, okay, that's interesting. And I said, but don't you think we do need that? No, we don't. We are we're there. I was like, really? I said, let's look at board numbers.
Yeah.
And she said, it's 50-50. I feel like it's 50-50. I said, do you feel that or do you know that? And maybe in her bubble, she's in downtown Toronto. She's probably working with very woke companies, although I can't imagine. So I had to interrupt dinner and Google it. And then everyone else started Googling. Everyone started shouting 5%, 20%, 21%, depending on the industry.
Yes.
And she's like, okay, fine. Like, I can't even believe we still have to have that conversation.
Yes.
So keep fighting the fight. Be visible. Include yourself. Invite yourself. Speak. When you do go to something, speak up. Doing this, interviewing each other, giving women a platform is essential. And these incubators are doing an excellent job of that. You know, in Innovation Guelph, they have this RISE program for women entrepreneurs that is exceptional. And some really exceptional women entrepreneurs are going through that program. And these businesses are really going to be something. I think that there is still a need to have mentorship and a different channel for women entrepreneurs to go through and women leaders to go through. And that's probably why IWF exists.
Yes, I would think so. Are you seeing more women in the accelerators come through the Accelerator Center program? Or do you think that the startup space, especially sometimes in tech, is still a bit not enough women?
Startup is, and tech probably is still. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does skew. You need to look at the, you know, students, like the student ratios. But it's not all tech there.
No, it's not.
And at least, you know, I see a lot of groups where women engineers are sitting mm-hmm. on the founder table, or like in the Ellen Winters example we were talking about earlier, you know, it was her idea. It's her baby. Mm-hmm. She engaged with a tech company to make it come to life. So as long as women will still continue to pursue the idea and find the right teams, it's sticking with the idea and not thinking, well, I'm not a techie person, so I can't do it. If it isn't core to your being, but it's core to your business, find a solution and still lead the company.
I think that's very good advice. In your work with the Accelerator Center, do you see different leadership styles between men and women in the startup space?
I do. I think I see it in my real life too. Mm-hmm. You know, an example, actually going back to book club, of the 20 people I sent it out to, I did 10 women, 10 men. I was very surprised how quickly the women came back, and women that I really thought would join said, I'm just too busy right now. I can't, I've got the, I can't. Women, generally, and I hope this isn't true, but this is my impression, are less likely to invest in themselves and less likely to go down this path and say, I'm carving out this amount of time for my startup, for my book club, for me, for whatever, for my health. And then men say, I've joined this accelerator, I'm giving it 20 hours a week, whatever has to happen, make room. And so the women that do join, though, they're very focused and they're very, while they're at it, but I do think they have a lot more to juggle. They have a lot more to think about. They are very open to asking for help. They're engaged with it, but they're less aggressive about, you know, booking the meetings and asking for emergency help. And I've got this thing. They don't want to interrupt. They're very polite. Whereas I find that, I don't know, the general community they're a little bolder about asking and getting on the calendar and asking specifically for what they need and speaking up and challenging, you know, and we talk about women and imposter syndrome. We talk about that all the time.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, from time to time, just this week, a man will tell me that he has imposter syndrome. And it's so less obvious. Or they don't bring it up. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas women will be like, oh, my God, there's my imposter syndrome. And I don't know. I think I do see differences, but they're no less likely to be successful and they're no less likely to be involved in the general business scape. I mean, tech is a different story.
You mentioned imposter syndrome, actually. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on, the concept of imposter syndrome, and have you ever experienced it yourself?
Of course I have. But I think it's actually mentioned in this book, Limitless, which we keep talking about. It's really just that little voice in your head and the things you tell yourself or the things you hear from your third grade teacher over and over still. And so just knowing what they are, writing them down, knowing what they are, it's not a syndrome. It's a thing. It's a sentence. It's a thing. If you can face it, if you can be aware of it, I think calling it a syndrome and making it this big bag of crap that you carry around and talking about it, I think you're giving it too much power.
I agree. That's very good advice. I think that's a great place to stop. Thank you, Tricia, for joining us on our podcast. This has been such an engaging conversation, and I really, really love your story, all your stories, but your story, your arc, your journey, it's really admirable.
Well, thank you. I've got more.
Well, you'll have to come back when one of the URLs has really turned into something. I want to hear all about it.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. This has been great. And I look forward to listening to the first one that lands today.
Today.
Right? Where's it going to be?
Oh, everywhere. Anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Excellent.
Ginny DeBenko is our inaugural episode, as she is the founder of our chapter. So
wonderful.
Yes. Download, listen, like, share.
I will.
Thank you, Tricia.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more leaders can find us and be inspired by the stories our Voices of Leadership have to share. If you would like to connect with us, please visit the Voices of Leadership website. The link can be found in our show notes, available wherever you listen to podcasts.